Welcome to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec and DLT Solutions on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest is Michael Jeffries, the Federal Labor Relations Authority's Chief Information Officer. Mike, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
So it's always interesting to catch up with small agencies. One thing about small agencies is they have all the same problems as large agencies, but on a different type of scale, and there's some more different complexities. But I always like to start at the beginning of these conversations. The Federal Labor Relations Authority, everyone probably can just by your name to tell us what your mission is. But I'd like to get it from you, since you work here. Tell us what your mission is for the FLRA.
So the mission of the FLRA is to promote stable, constructive labor management relations through the resolution and pursuits in a manner that gives full effect to the collective bargaining rights of employees, unions, and agencies.
All right, so that's the easy one. You are the CIO of that agency. So from a CIO's perspective, how do you support that mission? What are some of the things you do every day to make sure that the men and women who work for the agency meet their goals?
Through a variety of ways, actually, either directly or indirectly, everything we do supports the agency mission. However, in my opinion, it starts with agency leadership. I've established a very close working relationship with presidential leadership here, Chairman Pope, Member DeBester, Member Pizzella, General Counsel Julie Clark, and Federal Service Impasse Panel Chair Mary Jackstite. Through collaboration with my boss, Executive Director Sarah Spooner, we facilitate a constant communication with leadership regarding the status of the agency IT landscape. Equally important, as a CIO, I also maintain relationships throughout the agency and ensure communication is also shared agency-wide. Customer service is a priority. We are not strictly focused on projects in the back-end infrastructure. Maintaining constant communication helps ensure we are meeting the agency user needs and will ultimately help better support the mission. Of course, driving innovation is another way in which I support the agency mission. One of my early successes was the implementation of video teleconferencing throughout the agency. This supports our regions and here at headquarters, both reducing travel cost and better outreach capabilities for external customers. Because we're a small agency, it is very critical that we are agile and can adapt quickly. To do this, it requires constant communication and direct, honest discussions with leadership. They need to know what the impact will be if we do or do not do something. I also ensure we come with alternate solutions where possible. With the support of agency leadership, we are able to remain agile and rapidly switch gears. We have been very successful and able to see gains where otherwise it might take years to complete projects. For example, the first 6 months of my arrival, we were able to implement a new video teleconferencing solution that I just spoke about, deploy new agency laptops, redesign the agency main conference room with AV equipment, transition from BlackBerries to iPhones, and begin the process of transitioning our regions to business cable, all within the first 6 months. Now, typically, you wouldn't be able to do that in a large agency, and you wouldn't be able to move quickly. So that's one of the many ways we can support the mission, is just by being agile and being able to move quickly on certain projects.
Interesting. A lot going on. I know you started to get into your priorities a little bit and some accomplishments. No, we'll definitely go back and circle around. What's interesting to me is that one of the board members, Pat Pizzella, is a former CIO at the Department of Labor. Yes. So I've worked with him years ago. So I know it's always good to have maybe not so good for you to have that other person in the community to help you out.
Pat's wonderful. Oftentimes I'll come down and I'll meet with Pat and we'll kind of discuss different IT matters. And it's nice to have another voice to talk to.
I know during his days of labor that he was doing a lot of the eGov stuff. So obviously it's a benefit. Now, from a perspective of a CIO and where you sit, it's a small agency, so a lot of times when I ask large agency CIOs this question, they say, well, I do both, right? So are you operational? Are you strategic? Are you both? From a small agency's perspective, I imagine you're both, but you probably lean heavy on the operations. Give me a sense.
I would say it's probably 50-50, but I'm definitely trying to maintain more of a strategic view and a global view. I have some good guys on staff. We might be small, but we can get a lot done with a small group.
And that's one of the benefits, I think, of being a CIO in a small agency as well, is what you can get done. So you don't get that call at 3 in the morning when the email goes down, or when the BlackBerry or the iPhone now, if one of the members isn't working right, somebody else gets that call, hopefully?
Oh, no, I get the call. And it's most definitely, you get the weekend calls, the, hey, my BlackBerry's not working, how do I tether again, that kind of thing. And I'll absolutely jump in and help where I can. I was setting up user accounts the other day just because my guys were out and I needed to help out. So it happens, you know. You get down into the weeds much further than you would normally in a large agency.
Now, is that good for you? Is that part of your background? I mean, coming up through the ranks, if you will, you've been here, I guess, almost 2 years or just over 2 years. Mm-hmm. Is that the type of CIO you expected to be or thought you'd be? Or were you always in the programming side, the operational side anyways?
Well, my background is definitely on the application development side. But I definitely enjoy being down in the weeds. Probably a little more than I anticipated I'd be at this point, but it makes me feel a little more connected. The one thing I really enjoy is the atmosphere of a small agency. It's very much a family, and you get to know everybody. And so it's no longer about getting the work done. It's about how can I help someone and get it done fast.
And I think that's one of the benefits of being a small agency, the fact that you know who your customer is versus, you know, if you just to pick on Pat for a second, because I can, at Labor, he may have, 10 or 12 or 13,000 people who was his customer back at Labor. Here, you have a few hundred people or maybe 1,000 or so who are your customer. And you probably know all, at least at a certain level, all the C-suite folks and then some.
Sure. Actually, we only have 150 people. We have 6 regions, so it is very close-knit, and I know everyone in this agency. I've talked to them personally and seen them personally, so it's quite a bit different.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was that small. You always think about agencies, even the small ones, that 150 people is small. So let's talk about your background a little bit. Where did you come from? Where else have you worked, inside or out of government?
Prior to the government, I was a consultant for about 10 years doing application development. And then I started my government career at Food and Drug Administration, and I was there for a couple of years. Then I moved on to Inspector General's office for HHS, and I spent about 5 years there. And then prior to here, I was at Department of Justice Tax Division for 8 years, where I was CIO there. So there I was a CIO over an office, OBD, Office Boards and Divisions. And so one of the reasons that led me to come to FLRA was the experience of being the agency head CIO.
It's big different in terms of missions. Did you end up here for a reason? Did someone recruit you? Or was it, if you will, a job opening that you thought would be kind of interesting to work for and you jumped in?
Quite honestly, blind luck. It just happened to be, I'd been at Department of Justice for about 8 years, and I noticed the announcement. I applied, and here I am today.
Here you are today. Very nice. 2 years later. Let's talk a little bit about your office, your CIO's office. How many people do you have working for you from a government perspective? Do you have contractors working for you? And then, again, what's your IT budget for 2016?
Currently, there's 4 of us, including myself, as government staff for IT. And then we also have 2 contract staff for the help desk, so 6 total. And our budget is very small. It's $1.2 million. That does not include salaries.
So that's just projects and things you're working on. That's one of the big challenges with any small agency, is the resource piece. So only 6 of you, small budget, to get stuff done. I mean, is that when you look across the landscape, there's plenty of challenges. We could talk cyber, we could talk cloud, we could talk a number of things. But is the resource issue something that you're always kind of up against in many ways? Not necessarily from a pure dollar figure, but just having enough people to do things you want to do.
Absolutely. So anytime we're trying to plan a new project or look at new technology, I need to take into account, one, what do my staff have in terms of a skill set, and how does that match up with what we're trying to implement? If I have to go outside, obviously you have to account for getting some expertise in the area that you want to implement. I've been pretty lucky. The guys I have, they each have a unique skill set, but they're also generalists, and so we can kind of be flexible with the and creative with the projects that we want to implement.
Interesting, small staff, but obviously we're going to find out what you can get done with that small staff. But first, we're going to take a break. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and my guest today is Michael Jeffries, the Federal Labor Relations Authority's Chief Information Officer. Now, Mike, before break, we talked a little bit about your office, the makeup, small budget, $1.2 million, but you got, with as any CIO knows, there's always a lot to get done in the IT world. So let's jump in. What are your priorities? What are you trying to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
We have several projects this year that we want to take on. The first one is we want to complete e-filing 2.0. After receiving feedback from our user community, we are in the process of reprogramming our e-filing system to be more user-friendly. Over the next couple months, we are looking to complete this transition. Another project that we have is implementing a document management system. We're looking to implement a new document management system as part of a larger goal for implementing a complete electronic case file and eventually meet the mandate that agencies manage all permanent electronic records in electronic format by December 2019. A third project that we have is continuing to transition the remaining two regional offices to business cable. We started later last year, we started transitioning some of our offices to business cable in order to, one, give them faster network speeds, and two, reduce cost. They were on a managed service, and now we're moving to business cable.
All right, so a couple things to follow up with. Let me start with the last one. When you talk about business cable, I mean, is that, for instance, like if I owned a business and I went to Verizon or AT&T or someone like that, or is this a different type of term of art, if you will?
No, that's exactly what it is. In three of our sites, we switched them over to Comcast Business Cable, and in one of our sites, we had to go to AT&T U-verse. One of the unforeseen challenges we have is finding a high-speed business cable in all of our regions. So we have two that are left that we still haven't been able to convert.
Is there a challenge to converting these? I mean, is it just a matter of getting them off the managed service and onto the local provider network, if you will, or is there something more to it?
Oh, absolutely. It's a challenge. The challenge is to stay within our TIC. So we are on a trusted internet connection, and everything has to funnel through here, through headquarters. So we put equipment out in the regions that over a secure VPN tunnel that comes back here. So it's been interesting. And one other unexpected outcome was our headquarters here became a bottleneck once we had multiple sites up and running. So we are also in the process of increasing our bandwidth here so that we're no longer the bottleneck.
I was going to actually ask that question, because where are your regions located? I mean, if they're all over the country, or you know, you have one couple out west, for instance, that have to kind of come back east, mm-hmm. that I just talked to another CIO who had the same issue of how to deal with that bottleneck. So first of all, it's nice to hear someone bring up the word TIC, trusted internet connection. You don't hear that too much nowadays. But secondly, the bottleneck issue. So first, how do you deal with the TIC? Because you're right, everything has to pass through that trusted internet connection.
Initially, we had it set up where everything comes in through headquarters, goes out the TIC, comes back in through headquarters, and it was our pipe was only DS3. And it was just not enough to support the larger bandwidth that we were receiving from these business cable. So now we've gone out and we have a new company that has given us a much larger pipe here, and all internal traffic is going to travel over that internal pipe, and we will create VPNs, secure VPN tunnels from our sites to here.
Now, when you think of VPN, you think of, you know, I'm out in the field, I have to log on specifically. I imagine this secure VPN tunnel will be an automatic log on. As soon as you log on to the network, hopefully using HSPD12 smart cards, but we can talk about that later, you're automatically connected to the VPN. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. We have equipment out in the fields that our VPNs established with the equipment.
When you talk about people in the field, are they working mainly from an office? Are they out and about, meaning are they doing field work as well, or is it mostly everything's from a regional office, you know, behind a desk, able to access that VPN, that larger pipe?
Most of the regions are actually out in a regional office, but we do have telework policies, and we do enable users. Sometimes they do have to travel to other offices. One of the benefits to adding VTC reduces the amount they have to travel to other users' offices.
Because I imagine just adding that extra complexity, as you said, telework is one thing, but if they all of a sudden had to work from a place with low bandwidth or low Wi-Fi or something, that would add more complexity to it. The other piece of this is from a timing standpoint, you said I think by the end of June you make that connection. Since you've done it in other regions, are these last few regions, again, I'll use the word easier, or is it each are different because of where they're located and what their needs are?
Yes. So we do not have a date for when it's going to be completed, because unfortunately right now we don't have a company that will give us high-speed cable connections. Well, let me back up. We do have a company, but they want to charge us a lot of money to bring it into the building. So as we stated earlier, one of our big issues is a small budget, so we got to get creative, and we haven't been able to get creative with those two offices yet.
Well, now by being on my show, you will get plenty of vendors who will want to help you and get creative, so I promise you that. Let's jump to another one of your big priorities, the eFile 2.0. Talk a little bit about what that is and how that's changing from, if you will, 1.0.
A little history behind e-filing. Our agency back in, I believe, 2010, prior to my arrival, went to a product called QuickBase. And Intuit QuickBase, and that is a tool that is used to rapidly develop applications, and it's in the cloud. But unfortunately, the user interface is not as flexible as we need, and we've stretched it to its limit. And so now we've implemented a new interface using Ruby on Rails, and that is what we are building e-filing 2.0 on. And that essentially is building a new interface on the same database.
And this interface, when you talk about users were less than maybe pleased with it and adoption became harder, are you going through, if you will, the agile, the iterative development we hear a lot about in the community, user-centered design, getting people to test it? You talk about the betas, obviously.
Absolutely.
You're getting much better feedback, it sounds like, as well.
Sure. You mentioned agile. One of the things I always tell my boss is we're about as agile as you could be. You have to be, because our budget is so small, our staff is so small. We're adjusting on the fly. We build to see gains immediately versus years down the road. So, yes, we have a user group. We internally test. We send it out to our folks, and then we also put it out in beta so that the external users can give us feedback as well.
And generally speaking, on those couple beta tests so far, good feedback? I mean, do you feel like you're down the right path for the most part?
Absolutely. We've gotten pretty much all positive feedback. So it's so far so good.
And looking forward, you talked about, I guess, two systems that have moved to the new user interface. What's left to go next? Is it how many more systems?
So as I said earlier, FISIP was our first beta. Our next one that we'll be putting out here shortly is the Office of General Counsel, and then OALJ, Office of Administrative Law Judges, and finally the authority will come out.
The entire authority, right? And you mentioned what was interesting about this was, and I've heard a lot of CIOs talk about it, is to comply with the NARA, the OMB policy about records management. This will take you there. Imagine all this effort will push you into the positive side of that policy.
It will. It's basically phase one or phase two of the project. Our next phase will be to bring the rest of the internal case management system on board with using Ruby on Rails as the interface. And then the final phase will be to integrate the case management system with the document management system.
And the document management system is related to the e-file system, but it's much broader, I imagine, right?
Correct. So the idea behind the document management system is where the case file will be stored rather than in a paper drawer somewhere. It will be electronically stored.
And how exciting is that? You think this should have happened 15 or 20 years ago, but I know agencies, especially small ones, sometimes that's a big jump, and there's a cost and all those good things. I mean, how much of this will change the way the FLRA meets its mission?
This is huge. This will provide folks access to all the case files from their home, from their office, from other offices. Wherever they're at, they can access this information. This will greatly reduce cost for paper,
So, I mean, I think that's obviously a big shift. And I know, from a workforce perspective, there's some training that has to get involved. I imagine, does that training come from your office because it's a IT system, so to speak? Do you have a plan yet in terms of the change management and the training and all that?
We're still in the beginning phases, but we're absolutely thinking about that. And that is part of our plans. And that will come from our office. The initial phase will be to implement a document management system outside of the case management system, so that gets everyone used to using it. Right now, we're just using standard network shares. So I want to transition the agency from that to the document management system, and then down the road will be the integration with the case management system. And there's absolutely got to be a lot of training, a lot of communication, a lot of discussions around it.
All right, very good. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can jump into maybe some priorities maybe you didn't mention. My guest is Michael Jeffries, the Federal Labor Relations Authority's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Mike, before break, we're talking a lot about your priorities. You mentioned some very mission-critical priorities, case management, document management, obviously, and bandwidth issues, network issues. One thing you didn't mention, though, you gave us a little hint of, was cloud. That's something I hear from all CIOs. So let's start there. Are you guys in the cloud? Are you moving to the cloud? Are you taking advantage of the big buzz that's going on in the federal community?
We are in the cloud. As I mentioned earlier, our case management system is in the cloud. We are looking at other opportunities to move to the cloud. Although, as a small agency, it can be quite expensive to do so. So our hope is that opportunities will come up where it's not as expensive and we can actually see more of a benefit to doing so.
And I imagine, to jump in, that the expense for you guys is not necessarily the cost per seat, if you will, but the actual moving your data, or is it a little bit of both? You can, by hosting email as one example, internally that could be cheaper than going out to the cloud. I mean, is that, where do you see the cost challenge?
That's exactly it. So because we're a small staff, we basically share duties and they do multiple things. So just because I move something to the cloud doesn't mean that I can reduce cost by eliminating a position, because I can't eliminate that position. And ultimately, when we run the numbers, it costs less for us to manage something here than to move it to the cloud. Now, one area that we are moving to the cloud where we're going to see a benefit is our mobile device management solution. We should be doing that in the next couple months, transitioning our iPhone MDM to the cloud.
And I definitely want to talk mobile, but let me go back to the idea of cloud. Do you guys talk to other agencies about piggybacking on their contracts? Obviously, you're an independent agency, so it's not like you're a bureau to somebody else. But, you know, whether it's GSA or USDA or Interior, somebody who's been in the cloud with a lot of email, as another example, have you talked to them about piggybacking on their prices? And, you know, for the company that supports them, it's, what's another 150 seats? It's not really a great deal. But because they're already supporting 100,000 people or whatever it is, that you get that price level. Is that part of the conversation?
It is and it isn't. It is something that we discuss internally. I have not, to be honest with you, reached out to another agency at this point. I think just because we've had enough on our plate, taking it one step at a time. We did entertain Microsoft 365 last summer. We got pricing, and another big deterrent was, how do we do this with the tick? How do we run everything through the trusted internet connection? So there's just different challenges. Even if the pricing is right, it's not that easy for us to move quickly on these things because of the challenges that we have.
No, I think that's sometimes is lost in the discussion, where you can be agile and flexible in many regards, but when it comes to kind of the day-to-day technology, you can't, one, it can't go down, and two, you probably already are pretty cost conscious because you have to be. So there's a different challenges, as you said, that come into play versus maybe a large agency. When you talk about cloud, are you looking at your data centers, storage, anything like that as well, looking toward cloud, or even virtualization is another hot topic?
Certainly, if we can find the right price point, I think moving things like for the data center, moving servers to the cloud might be a nice idea, especially where you're talking about Coop and being able to recover quickly. Everything's on the table, let's put it that way. It's just a matter of finding the time, finding the resources, having the funding to do it, and what the needs are at the moment.
I know that from just talking to CIOs all the time, there's always something new and another, if you will, fire to put out. Let's talk a little bit about mobility. That's another one. You talk about moving your current MDM solution to the cloud, but you guys are an iPhone shop, laptops as well. Is that right?
Correct. All users have a laptop. Roughly a third of the agency has iPhone, mostly managers and such. Everyone can remote in. We have VPN access, pretty standard access that most agencies have. So mobility is not an issue for us. Can we improve? Sure. Would we like to? Yes. One of the things that down the road I'm going to be looking at is VDI, virtual desktop interface. And I absolutely would be looking at a cloud solution for that, or an internally housed one, but whatever works best.
I think one thing that you hear a lot from agencies is, as they move to VDI, is it makes cybersecurity easier. It makes, updates to applications easier. But you guys sound like, because you're not that big, you probably can push those updates fairly easy or fairly quickly. You probably don't have the same as the patching problems that a labor department or an interior or USDA may have. To the extent of how big they are, there's always a challenge around patching and stuff. I mean, is that part of the reason why, again, keeping things internal makes maybe more sense for you guys, because you're, again, the flexibility, the agility that you already have built in?
Yeah, I think keeping it internal helps from a cost perspective. We can set it up, we can manage it, but what it does is it stretches our guys even thinner, right? So the more I add to the plate, the less we are able to focus and be proactive with things, and we wind up being reactive. So moving forward, any new projects, anything that any new implementations, we are definitely looking at the cloud to as a way to reduce that stress on the guys and adding to their workload. Patching for a large agency, small agency, it's a hassle. It's a headache. It's something you know we do, and we manage it as best we can. But even for a small agency, it's not easy, and you find yourself getting caught behind sometimes.
I brought up patching. We talked a little bit about that. Let's talk cybersecurity more broadly. Every agency has moved into the cyber sprint mode, the Cybersecurity National Action Plan now that came out from OMB. Talk a little bit about what you guys are doing around cybersecurity as much as you can, obviously, and how did some things like cyber sprint really impact your agency?
The biggest benefit behind cyber sprint for us was it just brought more attention to the need for resources. Currently, we have essentially one individual who works on cybersecurity for us, and he's also doing five other things, right? So that's tough, and it's challenging to meet all the cybersecurity requirements. But with the cybersecurity sprint, we were able to successfully get a contract in place so that we could revamp our security policy. We have put in continuous monitoring. We wrote our security plan to be a living security plan, where we continually monitor our security settings through quarterly reviews, ultimately testing all NIST security settings over a 3-year period. This way, we don't have just this big security document sitting on a bookshelf collecting dust. This document is continually looked at. It's part of our continuous monitoring. We also were able to successfully purchase software to scan our network and do quarterly scans. These are some of the things that the sprint was able to afford us.
So the fact is, you guys have some tools, so you're doing continuous monitoring. It is a big, big change. I mean, I know so many agencies were struggling through the every 3-year ATO process, authority to operate. Are you seeing a difference already in terms of what you believe is the health and the safety of your network and data?
Yes, I am. And while I haven't really been able to see the benefits of this, what I'm calling a living document, a living security plan, I do think that we'll see the benefits down the road, and it's not something that we have to worry about anymore. In 3 years, I'm not going to go, oh, man, our security plan is outdated, we need to update it, and that kind of thing. We're continually looking at it. We're continually updating it. So we are definitely in a better position, and I think we're feeling a lot more confident in our posture.
Now, because you guys are considered a non-CFO Act agency, do you take part in, for instance, some of the cyber stats, or do you take part in some of the OMB kind of oversight pieces around cybersecurity, or is it done kind of just internally, but the cyber sprint, as you said, was able to draw some attention to it, so your chairwoman and your board were able to say, hey, what are we doing about this cyber issue? Is that where a lot of this impetus comes from?
Most of our stuff is handled internally. Now, I do sit on the small agency CIO council, get information there, and of course, during the sprint, there were different calls and things that we had to address and participate in. But for the most part, sometimes you feel like you're out on an island on your own. And that's just another one of the challenges that we have. Now, could we take advantage of other resources that are out there and be more proactive and be able to reach out to folks? We can. You don't always get the response you need.
Well, it's funny because I've talked to the Small Agency CIO Council chairman. It's been several years now. And it's always a fascinating kind of look into how things work because, again, we throughout this whole conversation that we've had, a lot of it goes back to the different set of complexities and challenges that maybe large agencies don't. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk about the new strategic plan that FLRA put out recently, as well as maybe innovation. My guest is Michael Jeffries, the Federal Labor Relations Authority's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Now, Mike, before break, we were talking a lot about your priorities to get in the cloud, mobility. We talked a little cybersecurity. The other thing that I think goes all related to that is a strategic plan that the FLRA recently put out about a month ago or so. And when I look through that strategic plan, I can see technology, technology, technology. So I'm thinking your role is pretty big in it, both in the development of it, but also the implementation. So let's just start at the beginning. What's in the strategic plan? And then we can talk about your role.
Basically, we have three goals in our strategic plan. Goal one is to resolve disputes under the Federal Service Labor Management Relations Statute in a timely, high quality, and impartial manner. Goal two, we will promote stability in the federal labor management community by providing leadership and guidance through alternative dispute resolution and education. And goal three, we will manage our resources effectively and efficiently in order to achieve organizational excellence. So for goal one, obviously, you know, this is where we're going to try and streamline our case management process. We're going to try and help our look for opportunities to simplify this process. And by doing that, we're looking at, as I mentioned earlier, a document management solution. We're looking to integrate the case management solution with DMS down the road. Goal two, obviously, we have some things in place now. VTC will help our user community be able to stream training out to users, meet with folks. So technology, again, is helping out in that area. And then in goal three, being able to manage our resources effectively and efficiently, essentially whatever we do, we need to be sure that we're confident in what we're purchasing, confident in how we're using it, and confident that it's worth the money, quite frankly. Another aspect of goal three, where I'm a goal lead, is where we're going to be conducting internal surveys to our user community to find out how we are doing, how we're performing for them, and how we are effectively managing these resources. You know, this is just another way for us to get feedback from our user community and to provide better support.
Now, are these surveys something just for the CIO's perspective, or is this coming from all, if you will, back office functions, HR, acquisition, et cetera?
All back office functions for the office of the executive director.
And really the goal here is to say, you know, rate us, tell us what we can do better, where are we meeting your needs, where we're not meeting your needs. Are these surveys then new?
They are new. So we have a yearly survey, and then we have a point of service survey. And we take those surveys, and our goal is to get 85% positive and then continually improve up to, I believe it's 95%, which is a pretty high rate. But even out of the gates, we're meeting those goals, and we're pretty successful with the feedback we've gotten.
Before this, obviously this is a new strategic plan. Have you done these surveys before, or are these surveys something that maybe came from this idea of, if you think about the e-file system that we talked about earlier, as some of the users maybe weren't so excited about it, and by kind of refocusing the development of it, is that maybe part of the idea where the surveys came from in some ways?
The surveys really are a part of the new strategic plan. They came about through a working group. We were all discussing what measures we want to put in place and what things we want to do to reach these goals. So that's really how the survey came about.
Do you, when you go through specifically goal three about resources, there's always pressure on CIOs to reduce cost. From a small agency perspective, how do you do that from a CIO? I mean, you don't have a huge staff. You don't have, you know, someone who's just hugging servers, if you will. And as we talked about earlier, even moving to the cloud, while maybe it's cheaper for large agencies, for small ones it may not be. How do you as a CIO kind of manage that pressure?
That's a good question. And one that I have to quite honestly answer, that since I've been here, I think I've probably increased the budget. and that's only from the standpoint that the agency was without a CIO for about a year and a half prior to my arrival, and there was quite a number of things that needed updating and some changes that were needed to take place. So that doesn't answer your question. How do you do that? You just look for ways to cut. You look for ways to save. You know, one of the ways that we did that is with transitioning our regions to business cable. We actually are providing them with a faster network connection while also reducing cost. It also puts a little more overhead on my guys, because now we're managing it internally versus having a managed service. So there's a trade-off.
I think that trade-off sometimes gets overlooked, because a lot of times people just want the CIO to cut. And then, I mean, the argument was being made across, you know, the government at large for IT modernization, that sometimes you do have to spend a little to save some. And that seems the way you described it just now, what you faced as you came in, you know, a couple of years ago. Going down that same path, when we talk about managing results and being more handling internal resources better, innovation always comes up. And it sounds like you found a little innovation with the business cable. What other ways do you promote innovation throughout the FLRA?
Within FLRA, communication is definitely key. Chairman Pope is very committed to ensuring everyone in the agency is fully engaged. Where possible, we will share agency-wide initiatives, successes, and or new plans for innovation. We have what we call an in-session article, and weekly we take the opportunity to share information through that article throughout the agency. Another place we can do this, I can promote innovation, is that I chair the Agency Information Technology Council. We have a group of individuals throughout the agency that represent each office. We meet quarterly, and we discuss current and planned initiatives and any future things that we may want to discuss, potential projects. This is a great opportunity to get feedback, to have any issues brought to the table. Again, promoting innovation. And then third, I take advantage of the Small Agency CIO Council. There I can hear what others are doing. I can bring that back to the agency and try and look for different ways to innovate.
It's interesting that you talk about this IT council. One of the things that I hear time and again from CIOs is around the collaboration across the C-suite. Now, you guys aren't huge, so maybe collaboration is easier. Your office maybe right next door to the CFO's office. Mm-hmm. But do you find that you're spending more time with the other C-suite folks, whether it's acquisition or HR, just because of the integration? And I'll use that in a different type than you did. That's happening. I mean, we talk a lot about FITARA, the Federal IT Reform Act. I know that doesn't actually apply to FLRA, but the same principles probably still apply.
So you're right. Budget office is right down the hall from me. Procurement's downstairs. HR is down the hall from me. So we can easily go down and talk with one another. One of the other things that that we take advantage of here at the agencies, we're a small agency, and one of the things I like to do is have an agency sponsor, someone who's not within IT, who will be the project owner and help us promote whatever the project is. A great example is our FLRA.gov redesign. Gina Garpando is the Council for Regulatory and Public Affairs. She was our agency sponsor for that project. She did a phenomenal job. She helped us promote this. She helped organize groups of people to help rewrite the data. It's just one example of a successful project that we had where we took advantage of the FLRA community to help deliver a project versus having everything be left on IT.
And I think at the same time, because your staff is small, you said, you know, really six people, four feds, yourself included, and then two contractors, mm-hmm. you need that extra help. You need to reach out. And then you also bring in, they become owners of whatever project it is or system or network or whatever, what have you. Talk from a workforce perspective is, you know, you guys with a small staff, do you have to, if you will, look for those owners whenever you do specific mission area projects? Something like MDM in the cloud maybe can be owned by your office. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about, you know, the e-case file system as an example, maybe you do need a mission owner on that one. How do you deal with that from a workforce perspective?
Absolutely. We do want a sponsor, if you will. And how do we deal with that? Unfortunately, it's usually almost the same folks every time. So we try and move it around. But I mentioned Gina earlier. She is quite often a resource we use, and she's a great resource. Again, that gets back to the nature of a small agency. You only have so many folks you can tap for things. And obviously, you want to try and spread it out, but usually it winds up being the same group of people.
But that's also why you guys are, if you will, one of the best places to work. Talk a little bit about how that fits in from an IT perspective. Obviously, when we talk about the best places to work, it's across the entire agency. But that also, I'm sure, trickles down into your world.
Once again, Chairman Pope, she is the driving force behind how we got to be number three for best places to work. She is very much committed to everyone being engaged, everyone being involved. Pretty much in everything that we do, we look for feedback. We try to get users involved in simple things such as deciding on what pictures to use for the website. Our office space was renovated, and we reached out to folks and asked them, you know, what type of lights they wanted in the kitchen and that kind of thing. Just small touches where we can get people involved, get them feeling like they are engaged with everything that we're doing.
And I think that's part of the good thing about being a small agency. I mean, you've worked at Justice Department, you worked at other agencies. I mean, how do you, from a CIO's perspective, from an IT perspective, there's benefits on both sides. We know that, and there's challenges. But do you think that's why, you know, people stay at your agency, why people rate it so high? Is because today they're working on X, and tomorrow they're working on Y, and the next day is Z?
I think that's absolutely one of the primary reasons why. I think, again, the close-knit, the family atmosphere that we have here. I was at Department of Justice, a large agency. And while I was in a small division, it's still, it takes a while to get things done, and you don't meet everybody, you don't know everybody. Here at FLRA, you know everyone. Things kind of move at an easier pace, if you will.
Well, we are almost out of time. Before I let you go, I always like to ask the getaway question. I know vendors listen to my show, so they probably, when they heard your budget of only $1.2 million, had a big sigh, and hopefully they kept and didn't turn the channel. But talk a little bit about if vendors do want to approach you, if they do want to come meet with you, do you take meetings? How do you work with vendors? They're hearing a lot of stuff about cloud and telecom, and they're hearing potential opportunities, even though maybe not big money opportunities, it's still opportunities.
Typically what we do is if there's a need and we have an area where we need to look for get further information on something, we'll reach out to a vendor. But if vendors want to contact us, they certainly can do that. I routinely get cold calls or emails. That's totally fine. One of the things vendors need to remember, we're a small agency, and sometimes vendors will come with the idea that we're a government agency and that we have large budgets, and that's just not the case. So you have to be prepared to be creative and be agile, just like we are.
All right, good advice. And we'll also link to your strategic plan online, make sure people can find it easily enough. I'd like to thank my guest today, Michael Jeffries, the Federal Labor Relations Authority's Chief Information Officer. Mike, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Ask the CIO.